Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, October 21st, 2018. This is episode 1534. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hello. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, it's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones. We got smartwatches, you know, all that stuff, all the gimcracks and G-jaws and gizmos that make this world so complicated, frankly. Would you say it's fun? Would you? I mean, it depends, I guess, on your mood. My wife and I have reverted to our early teen years. I got rid of, it's a complicated story. I got rid of all my social media. I deactivated my Twitter, my Facebook, my Instagram, my Tumblr, got rid of it all because I wanted to focus more on posting stuff on my site, on my blog, which I, you know, I've always kind of espoused. And it's true that once I started using Twitter way back in 2007, 11 years ago now, wow, I didn't blog as much because I was, you know, you get that itch scratched by just putting little short, dumb comments on Twitter that are temporary, except they last forever, to some people's chagrin. Anyway, having gotten rid of that, I don't have much to do on my smartphone. I look at it and I go, huh, yeah. So my wife and I have picked up a silly little kids game. We started playing it a couple of years ago, kind of, you know, fell off of it and started playing it again. The only reason I like it, it's called You Know This Game. It was all the rage in 2016. Pokemon Go. And it comes from a Google spinoff called Niantic, which probably means it has devilish, evil plans. In order to play this game, though, you can't just sit on your rear at home. You have to get out and about and walk around, which I like. I feel like that justifies the playing of the game. And the idea is you walk around in the real world and you capture. It was an early augmented reality game where you capture these pocket monsters, Pokemon, in the outside world. And there are, you know, it's funny. I mean, you're walking around downtown, but when you get to the post office, it's not only a U.S. post office. On your phone, you can see, in fact, that it's also what they call a gym where other Pokemon are. And there's different teams, and you can, if they're of another team, I'm Team Valor, which is red, if they're Mystic, or was it Instinct, yellow or blue, then I can attack them and take over that gym for my team, and others can help. It's also kind of a communal game. You run into people playing it all the time. I'm thinking about it today because today is what they call a community day. Once a month, they do a big community day. And people will be out and about right now, actually, capturing special. You know, when you talk about it, it sounds really silly. Special little Pokemon that are all out and about. So if you see some people wandering, probably buried in their phone, the distinctive sign of a Pokemon Go player is that they're swiping briskly up the phone. That's tossing the ball at the Pokemon to capture it. Sometimes swirling their finger in a circle if they're an advanced player. If you see them wandering, give them a little leeway. Don't aim your car at them. If it would do me a kindness, just pause, let them go, oblivious on their way. They're in half in this world, walking around, half in another world, where they are capturing little pocket monsters. It's kind of fun, actually. I thought today it'd be nice to talk about nice things, happy things. I don't know if that's a nice thing or a happy thing. But for my wife and me, it's kind of cool because we take walks and we can play the game. And this morning, I arose and she said, "Quick, down to the church. There's a wild lickitung raid going on." And we ran down. Well, we didn't ran. We actually rode our Pokemon. We have special Pokemon Segways. We hopped on those and probably looked really crazy riding down to the church, taking the gym, riding back, happy with a Lickitung Pokemon in our pouches. Well, not really, because it's all made up. I saw a very happy, happy story. There's an app, a wonderful app. Yeah, by the way, somebody's saying in the chat room, you go to church for the Pokemon but stay for the services. Yeah, I probably should have, but I had to get here. I had, it was Seventh-day Adventist, so they weren't even in session. They celebrated on another day, so nothing I could do there. There's an app that is really a cool app, volunteer app, where people volunteer to read things for other people, for blind people. And blind people can use the app. They could take a picture of something, and then a volunteer will say, "Oh yes, that's a blue dress," you know, or it's a really nice idea. I'm trying to remember the name of the app. They just announced that they have 1 million volunteers, and I just thought that's so cool. Can't remember where I saw that story. I'm trying to find the story real quickly here. 1 million people have used this app, have volunteered to say, "Yeah, I'll read something or I'll look at something for a blind person," and type into the app what it is, which makes it, of course, incredibly useful. What is it? Chat room, do you remember the name of that app? It's I Can See This, I Saw This, Help Me See This, something like that. Very, very nice story, I thought, for a Sunday. We should tell good stories. Nothing bad. No breaches, break-ins. Nothing about the Saudis grooming a Twitter employee to spy on dissident accounts. No, I don't want to do all of that. No, happy. Why don't you call me and share some happy stories? Heather Hammond is in here, the phone ranger answering the phones for us today because Kim's taking a weekend off. That's a happy story for Kim. Happy story for us because we get Heather. 8888-ASK-LEO is our number, 888-827-5536, if you want to talk tech. 8888-ASK-LEO. Be My Eyes. Thank you. Thank you to the chat room. They remember that app. What a great story. Be My Eyes now has 1 million people volunteering it to bring sight to blind and low vision people. It's a free app. You can get it on iOS or Android. Be My Eyes and volunteer. Somebody will, in the grocery store, a blind person will take a picture or a low vision person will take a picture of something and say, "What is that? What do you call?" Actually, I could use that. "What do you call that? Is that a parsnip? I'm looking for a..." I could use that. Be My Eyes. And then the sighted volunteer gets a video call and says, "Oh yeah, that's a parsnip," or "No, that's not a parsnip. That's a radish." I think we all could use this program, come to think of it. Anyway, bemyeyes.com if you want to find out more. And if you want to volunteer, I think the fact that they've reached 1 million people helping others, that makes me feel good about the world once again. Sometimes it's hard to do that. We're going to take a little break and come back. We shall talk tech with you at 8888-ASK-LEO. Answer your calls. That's kind of what I do, right? I'll be your geek. That's what we should call this, the Be Your Geek Show. I'll be your geek. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. That's where we'll put all the links and stuff so you don't have to write anything down. That's free. And we'll get to your phones right after this. I think Michael Cozio is playing music just for you, Heather. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you guys.
Yeah. They gave you the good microphone today.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, now I can hear you better.
Yeah, cup your ear while you're reading into that Gary Owens. Isn't that a great... So obviously, Burke and John like you because they gave you the fancy mic.
Oh, And I've been coached already.
It's purple, you know.
I saw that.
Purple Mike. Rain. Purple Mike. Heather is the phone ranger today. She's filling in for Kim. We don't usually get Heather because she's got a real job now.
Real jobs stink.
On the fabulous KGO in San Francisco, the great station, longtime great station in San Francisco. I used to work there myself many moons ago.
We need you back.
Well, I'm on their sister station, KSFO, right. So that's good. That's
KGO's
good.
KGO's got the big ass signal.
And you do the and you do the traffic in the afternoons now.
Exactly. PM traffic anchor.
Very nice. So if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know you need to know the traffic in San Francisco. And and Heather will help you get home.
It is so brutal.
It is brutal.
Every day I'm like, oh, you poor people. I look at these maps.
It is brutal.
Yeah, it's rough.
That's why I have a Segway. I can zip in and out amongst the cars. Have you seen now San Francisco on Monday? And I saw a bunch of them when I was there on Friday. They have given permission now. For a while, it was kind of the Wild West, like Santa Monica, where there were just a bunch of scooter companies.
Right.
And the big scooter company in Santa Monica is, what is it, Lime or, no,
Bird.
It's another, it's a Bird. Yeah, thank you. Bird.
Bird.
So Bird, Lime, which is owned by Uber, and a bunch of scooter companies all came into San Francisco at once, causing a problem, I think. There was littering scooters.
Well, and people were throwing them into the bay and stuff.
They were so angry about the scooter litter.
Why are people in San Francisco so angry? It's such a beautiful city. And there's pot. Like, chill out.
It's legal. Well, anyway, the city, the Board of Supervisors said, well, we're gonna look at all the different companies. We're going to pick two only that will be allowed in the city. And they picked Skip and Scoot.
That's it.
Which sounds like a Hardy Boys mystery, like it's a young adult fiction. Skip and Scoot and
or
the Wild
Brett Kavanaugh drinking buddy.
Oh, it could be Skip and Scoot. Skip and Scoot and the
Skip,
Devil's
Scoot,
Triangle. Skip and Scoot are so they're all around, but Lime is not, and Lime sued. Lime said, "Wait a minute, because it's owned by Uber, and we're Uber. What do you mean?" And the courts said, "No." San Francisco has the right to do that as a reasonable desire to keep the streets. Now, I didn't see I was kind of surprised there weren't a whole lot of scooters around.
Maybe they're rolling them out still. I mean,
maybe.
I remember seeing one on Monday right away. And
yeah.
I felt like, don't you think the city kind of gave it to Lime because they came first and didn't ask for permission?
So yeah.
It's like, we're going to show you.
Yeah, we'll show you. Maybe. Maybe that's what happened. I think it's a great idea, but I am too old to ride a scooter, aren't I?
No.
Do you feel comfortable? Have you hopped on a Skip or a Scoot?
You know, I haven't yet, and I should because, you know, just for kicks and try it.
You're tempted to, but it has a QR code on it,
mm-hmm.
and a smartphone. You pull out your smartphone, you scan it, and then they charge you. I don't think it can be very expensive. You hop on the scooter, and the point of all of this is you hop on, you ride wherever you want, and then you leave it there.
It's such a great idea.
Yeah, except for the fact that there's scooters littering everywhere.
Because we have the Ford bikes docking stations outside of the radio station.
Does anybody use those?
Well, yeah, a lot. That was very popular.
The community bike thing. Yeah, I like that a lot.
3 years ago.
But those have to go back into their docking stations.
Right. So maybe they need that for the scooters as well, just to sort of keep it under control.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's a great idea.
What are you going to do about all these issues?
Well, honestly, driving in San Francisco is a nightmare, as it probably is in any big city. There's not enough parking. It's not a car friendly city. They'll give you a ticket at the drop of a hat, and the tickets are expensive.
Oh my God!
So maybe we could, you know, maybe this is a down the road. Here's my vision. I hope it happens in the next, you know, in my lifetime, next 20 or 30 years, that some of the big cities in the world just ban cars entirely. They have parking lots on the outskirts. And they have either scooters or Segways or self-driving vehicles. Maybe they just have Waymos, so there's no congestion.
I like this.
As a pedestrian, these much more
it's
friendly.
Safer for the pedestrian,
yeah.
Right.
There's a little town in Italy, beautiful little medieval town called San Gimignano. It's much like Siena, which is more famous. Siena is a famous with all the towers. But Siena allows traffic in its core. But San Gimignano does not, and it's such a pleasure to wander around. You just park on the outskirts. It's quieter. I'm sure the residents like it, except for grocery day.
Okay.
I don't know.
So supervisors of San Francisco, listen to us. What if everybody parks on Treasure Island? They get in a tube.
Yeah.
And shoot into San Francisco,
I think honestly that's why companies like Uber are Uber is valued at over $100 billion is because not because of Uber today, but because of Uber in the future when they're self-driving vehicles and they dominate.
Right, when we get it all figured out. The other thing, though, is that I hear so commonly is people are like, oh, my God, I can't believe it. They just stop in a lane in front of me and they mess up traffic for blocks. But if we had lanes for Uber to pull into.
Well, if you just didn't have other cars, just all Uber, because then they all self-driving vehicles, because then they don't crash. They talk to each other. They don't hit pedestrians.
Right.
They just, well, maybe they do because there was a.
Working out the kinks.
But maybe less so. Maybe there's room for bicyclists now all of a sudden. Uber, by the way, is planning to go public early next year. And they think they're going to ask the markets for $120 billion.
Wow.
And it's not because they're an alternative to taxis. That's not the future of the company. The future of the company is self-driving vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Should I go work for Uber? Because I seem to know a lot about traffic.
You seem to be an expert. You know, I hear that all the traffic reporters in every city are going to be hired by Uber's self-driving car division. It'll be Heather Waymo.
Is that what we're going to call it?
That's what it's called. Well, Waymo is Google.
Waymo
is Google. That's their self-driving cars. Waymo. You can take a Waymo in Arizona now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All over?
I think Phoenix and Scottsdale, I can't remember what towns, but the idea is one of the things they have you do, you call ahead to the grocery store and you say, here's my grocery order. They put it in bags. Then this is the weird part. A Waymo comes and gets you. You get in the Waymo, drive to the grocery store, pick up the bags and drive back. Why they don't just...
Waymo, get my groceries.
Why do I need to get in the Waymo? Just bring me the groceries. That's a little odd use of a Waymo. I think it's more to introduce people to the Waymo. Well, Heather, we've wasted enough time. We don't have time to take any calls. So thank you, everybody. No, we're going to take calls when we come back. You've been answering the phone. We have lots of people on the line. And
killed that segment.
We killed an entire segment.
Sorry, Eddie.
I'm so happy to see you. I don't get to see you. Eddie will be next when we get back from Palmdale. Okay? Thank you, Heather Hammond.
You bet.
I'm wonderful at this, aren't I? Wasting time talking about Uber. I just think it would be so much better to be in cities if there weren't cars. Now, you'd have to have a way to get in, but self-driving vehicles or maybe these scooters. I don't know. Community cars. I don't know. Seems like there's got to be a better way. 8888 Ask Leo. Yes, I will be taking calls. When we return, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's no way to drive. We got to get that guy on Uber. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number if you want to call. Let's enough of this silliness. Let's take some calls. Help some people like Eddie in Palmdale. Hello, Eddie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, I got to press this button. There you go. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. What can I do for you today?
Yeah, I bought a new Vizio 65-inch 4K TV, and my question is for soundbars. What brand should I be looking at, and is a soundbar size proportionate to the TV?
Yeah, a soundbar is a convenience more than great audio. You know that. I mean, ideally, you'd have...
Right.
But who has space for this? You'd have a left, right, center channel. So that's three speakers in the front. You'd have a subwoofer, although many soundbars now come with subwoofers. And then to get the full surround sound, you have two speakers kind of at your ear distance from the TV, left and right. Those are the surrounds. And then some people even have Atmos. They have upward firing speakers. They have rear surrounds that go behind you. It depends how serious you are about your sound. A soundbar is great because TVs generally come with awful sound. Those Vizios, the sound on that, right? It sounds like...
Yeah, it's very flat, and my living room is actually pretty large. My couch, I would say, is easily maybe anywhere from 15 feet away from the TV, so it's very difficult to hear, at least from a distance.
Yeah, so that's kind of... that's one of the things you'd get with a soundbar, is you get much richer sound and much louder sound. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek, is always recommending the Vizios. If if you don't want to spend $1,000 on a soundbar, and you certainly can, Polk Audio and others have very expensive soundbars. If you're going to spend that kind of money, I'd say don't do, you know, unless wiring is an issue, don't do a soundbar. But if you want to spend about $150, Vizio has a very nice soundbar with a subwoofer, a wireless subwoofer, which gives you a nice, rich sound. And with these soundbars, they have multiple speakers in them. They're bars. They go along the entire bottom of the screen and often have 7 or 8 speakers in there, which means they can simulate surround. This, the one I'm looking at, the Vizio SB3821, the 38 is its length, 38 inches wide. So it's almost as wide as your TV. And it sounds great. I think it's, and that's $150.
Fantastic. That's a pretty good price. Thank
yeah.
You. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Much.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, you can spend, my wife bought a Bose sound bar plus subwoofer, and it had a kind of an AV receiver in it and all that jazz. And it ended up being, I think, $2,500, which this was before we were married. I probably would have stopped her. If you want to spend that kind of money, you'd really benefit from having an AV receiver. That's the first cost, and that's about $300 or $400. And then for anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500, you can get a 5.1 surround system that sounds so much better. So much better. Speaking of, you know what we're going to do? We're going to change microphones because I thought I'd steal Heather's microphone. I'm getting paid for paid back for it. Because her microphone's a little buzzy. Oh, it just got better. A little bit. Let me take another call, and I'm going to switch microphones while we do that. Back to line one, Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you, my friend. I'm thinking I made a mistake about 3 months ago when I went back to Comcast for TV.
Yeah, what happened? So what were you doing before Comcast?
For TV, we were streaming. We cut the cord.
So you said, I don't want cable. I'm going to save money. I'm going to get everything over the internet or over the top, as they say. Did that save you money? Just out of curiosity.
It saved me quite a bit of money. Saved me about $120 a month.
Nice. That's a lot.
And I had an antenna put on the house, and that was good. But
that's the best deal in television, is over the air, if you can do it.
Yeah, well, that's why I went back to Comcast. I started having big problems with the antenna.
Yeah.
So anyway, Comcast is getting a little itchy, you know, so they're giving some really good deals out. So
yeah.
Comcast for TV.
I remember, here's the deal on Comcast, because we're Comcast also. If you go into the office, because they have offices, often they're like storefronts, and talk to the human, you can often get a great deal. They have wonderful offers, but the trick is, they only, work for the first year, and then all of a sudden your bill doubles. So the trick, and I asked the woman. She said, "Yeah, we always have something. Just keep coming back before the year's out. Ask for the new deal."
Yeah.
So that's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I got a really good deal for 2 years actually.
Nice.
The 1 year catch is HBO, Showtime, and Cinemax for a year. So
right.
You gotta remember to cancel.
Yeah, you got. That's all. Just got to pay attention to it. So, but what's the now? Are you glad or are you sorry? What you said, you had some issues.
Well, yeah, one issue was the remote, but we got that fixed. And then I love that remote that you can talk to. By the way, that's great.
That is a nice feature. Yeah, Comcast is working hard with the X1 system and so forth to compete with, you know, really what is a threat to their business model, which is people like you, cord cutters. So they want to make sure they're offering something for that extra $120.
Pretty good. Anyway, the other day, you know, been using for the internet forever. The other day, woke up and no internet connection.
Uh-oh.
You go to a browser and it wanted to activate.
Right.
The cable.
Right.
It will not activate. I have an Aeris surfboard 6141. Doxus 3.
Is that yours or is that one that Comcast provided? You have your own.
Yes, it's mine.
Yeah, I like those Aeris. So here's the way this all works. The cable company sends us, they send a little signal down to the modem to activate it. And you can, I think you found it, there is a website where you press a button and supposedly it does that.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't work, then you need to call the service rep and say, hey, it's not activating. And they can do some things. Now, I've had a number of different things come up that make a difference. It's funny because it was working, right?
It was working great. Now they say, oh, They went through two little tests and said, we have to send somebody out. Now, I can get on the modem and check the statistics on the modem.
Yeah.
It shows connected. All the numbers read right. Signal strength, signal to noise, all that's correct. On the router itself, I can release the IP address from Comcast. We knew the IP address. And when you go through the activation process, you're using the internet to connect to Comcast, right?
Yeah, the internet's...
It shows you the CAPTCHA, you know, and you have to put the phone number and then send you a text. That's on the internet.
I know. So what they, I think this is all anti-piracy measures. You know, I don't want people stealing cable. So they register the MAC address, the MAC address, which is a unique number assigned to your router and to the cable modem. Everything on the on a network has a unique MAC address. And they
logged and they did that.
Yeah, in theory, I mean, if it was working, their MAC address was registered. But who knows what has happened since? The fact that they want to roll a truck. Look, Comcast does not want to send somebody out. That costs them money. The fact they want to roll a truck tells me they think, and this may be the case, there's something wrong with the physical connection.
TV works great.
Yeah, but the internet's different. And it may be that it's not even the connection to your house. It might be the up on the pole or if you have an underground cable. I've had Comcast come out, and I had the guy come out and test across the street because we have underground cables. He'd lift the hatch. He went in there and said, oh, yeah, that's a low signal. That cable's gotten a little frayed or whatever, and snip it and resplice it. And so that's what they're going to do. It's something like that. And I think you just let them roll the truck. It's probably not something you can fix.
They're going to come out and try to at least be a modem, right?
No, they won't. They're fine with that. I've never had them push me to get their modem. And just say no. I mean, you're better off. It's not your modem, I don't think. It's probably the wiring either to your house. What you hope is it's not the wiring in your house. Because that they're not going to fix. That's going to be on you. But something has slipped. And that's a physical connection. It can happen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I have my own modem. I don't use Comcast modems. I don't know what that buzz is. Maybe it's just the cable. Find the buzz.
Hey, you've heard me talk a lot.
I didn't hear it on her when she was using it, so it must be the wiring. On the other hand, I didn't hear it when Johnny Jett was in here, so I don't know. Yeah, we'll have to send it back to Bob. You know, he put it in his luggage. It probably got banged around a little bit. Oh, well.
Well, that's a good test.
Yes. There you go. That's the old troubleshooting method I've heard. Yeah, it sounds like crowns clamped to PVC. There, that'll work. Could be grounding. Could be a lot of things, yeah. Yeah, and honestly, it's something Comcast has to fix. I've gone through so many different issues with Comcast. Last time I was activating my daughter... And for whatever reason, when they deactivated the cable modem, and she's in an apartment building, when they deactivated the cable modem to the previous tenant, they went outside and disconnected the cable from the breakout box, which is nuts. So they had to roll a truck. Somebody had to connect it. There's no reason to do that. Yeah, they don't want to roll a truck. So if it's something provisioned, you know, if it's a provisioning issue at the office, they're not going to roll a truck for that. They must think it's a hardware issue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Josh in Sutter, California. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Leo. How's it going today?
It's going great. Are you up by the Sutter's Mill, by the gold country?
Nope. I'm actually north of Sacramento near the Sutter Buttes.
Oh, the Buttes. It's a butte.
Sutter Buttes. Yep.
There you go. I wonder if it's the same Sutter.
Well, Sutter's Mill is a little east of Sacramento.
Yeah.
Up near, like, Placerville and Auburn.
Right. It's where gold was discovered in 1849.
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! What can I do for you, Josh?
Well, I've built my own computers for years, and I have one that has been running pretty well the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Except within the last few months, when I turn it on, It just goes to the post screen.
Oy.
It just says, you know, Asus, and just sits there.
And you don't hear beeps or anything? It just sits on it?
Yep, just sits right there. So then I unplug it, let it sit, let the power drain out of it, and then plug it back in, turn it on, and it boots into Windows just fine.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
This is why people should not build their own computers. It's fun, and you learn a lot, and you get to make it exactly as you want it. But there is one downside to making it yourself. Is there's no one to call if it doesn't work. You got to call yourself.
I'm calling you.
Yeah, you call Leo. and then I'm just going to, you know, do the same thing that I do when I build a computer and it won't boot. The fact that it boots sometimes, I used to call these the double clutch computers where you had to double clutch it to get it to start up. often means, it. Sometimes it means that there's a bad, what we call a cold solder, where until the thing heats up a little bit, the connection doesn't get made. So that's, I don't think these days with the way motherboards are made, that's too likely. When you had a handmade device, if the solder wasn't good, the solder point wasn't good, heating, as it heated up, it would make the connection. And so by turning it on once, it's warming up, and then you turn it on again. Now it's the connection's made, and it'll stay, of course, it'll stay warm, so it'll be reliable until you turn it off and let it cool off again. So that's, but that's odd these days.
Can I give you some of the troubleshooting things I've done?
Sure, sure.
I've replaced the power supply with a brand new one.
Yeah, that's the first thing I'd try. Okay.
Yeah. I got the little battery on the motherboard I've taken out and replaced with
okay.
the new one.
Okay, good thinking.
I've reset the CMOS. I've double-checked the BIOS. Changed out some of the SATA cables.
Isn't this fun, kids? Don't you want to build your own PC? But that's how you learn, right? You know,
Harley Davidson.
All of this stuff makes sense to me because I've done it a million times. I know exactly what you're going through, and it's kind of, you know, just a pain. You got to keep going through it. Do you ride Harleys as well?
No, I don't.
But it is like that, isn't it? It's like your personal, my own personal Harley.
Yeah.
Wow, I don't know what else to do. You know, bad capacitors would have the same thing, and that was a problem for a while. But I think those have been pretty much solved as well. Usually if the motherboard has issues, you know, there's a perhaps the RAM is not being seen. You'll get post codes. You'll get beeps and boops. But it sounds like you're not getting to the power on self-test. You're kind of, it's freezing right at that point.
Right, yeah.
And I don't, you know, off the top of my head, I don't have a good solution for you on that one. Anybody in the chat room or listening wants to call in and make some suggestions. It's not posting, I think, because it's stopping at the post. Otherwise, you'd get something. You'd get sounds, at least. So.
Yeah, do you know of any little... other trouble like log files or BIOS log files?
Well, you're not getting the log files, so there's nothing to look at. you know, I'd refresh the BIOS, you know, make sure maybe it could be the BIOS got corrupted. In fact, that seems like a likelihood at this point. And that's stored in the CMOS. You change the battery, but the CMOS is only a part that only clears part of it. If the firmware itself is damaged, that's actually a problem. That's the equivalent of, you know, that scary thing when you're updating the firmware on a motherboard and they say, don't unplug it if you do. Oh, and so it may be that's what's happened, because it sounds like that's not getting run, that it's freezing.
Yeah, that's probably the only thing I haven't done is maybe just reinstall the BIOS firmware.
If you can, yeah. I would certainly try that.
All right. Will do, man.
Good
Thank
luck.
You very much.
Yeah. It used to be, I mean, this is a fun thing to do as a hobby, is to build your own computer. And it's not hard. In fact, I think every parent should make their child do this once. It's not like rebuilding an engine or something. I mean, you're not going to get your hands dirty. But it's a great way for a kid, especially. You know, if your 12-year-old says, 13-year-old says, I want a computer. Great. Let's get you a computer. First, and I've seen parents do this. I love this idea. First, let's choose all the parts. You got to go out and do the research and pick the parts that you want. Here's the budget. Here's how much you can spend. You've got to figure it out. That means they have to go online. They have to read reviews. They have to look at the figure out what parts are needed to make a computer. Great place to start is PC Perspective, PCPER.com, because they do something kind of old-fashioned. They have a hardware leaderboard, they call it, based on their reviews. It's out right at the top on the page, PCPER.com. It's the hardware leaderboard. They have four different systems you can build, starting with a $453 low-end system and all the way up to a $2,850 dream system. And they list there, don't tell your kid yet, but they list there all the parts you're going to need. You need a case. You need a motherboard. You need a processor. You need a video card. You need memory. You need storage, a hard drive. You may or may not want to get a sound card, depending on, you know, the motherboard will have a sound card and a network card most of the time. You need to get a power supply. Case usually has a power supply built in. So they, on the leaderboard, they say, well, for $453, here's what you should get. For $2,850, here's what you should get. And it's a great way. So get the kid. Don't tell the kid about this yet. Maybe if he has trouble finding it, but say, what do we need to make a PC? And he's going to learn a lot. And then, okay, let's choose the parts because, you know, how much do you have to spend? How much do you want to spend on the processor, on the memory? How much memory do you want? All of that is a great learning experience. However, it is also fraught with peril because you put it all together and it doesn't start. Oh, boy. Then you're in Josh's situation where, what do I do now? And it's all on you. Again, great for learning, but not so great for, you know, productivity. It might be one of those things that you, you know, you do once, and then from then on, you go to Dell. That'd be my advice. Dawn in La Puente, California. Hello, Dawn. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. This is my first time calling. I was going to, because last week you were talking about the scams and stuff, how you get scams, and I was going to call you guys, but I never got through. So today, I want to talk to you about, like, because I signed up for this survey, like online paid survey.
Yeah.
And I was wondering,
as long as they can waste your time, but they're not going to scam you if you don't give them a credit card, if you don't give them too much information. So there are certainly people surveying all the time. That's, you know, a big part of market research. And, many, you know, that's all legitimate. The key with scams is at some point they're going to ask you for something you don't want to give them. A credit card number, access to your computer, software that you have to install. Don't do any of that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So what are they asking you to do for this survey, Dawn?
They asked me... like, let's say, like on this survey site called Panel Payday, they say, we have a survey for you, and I click on it, and it wants me to complete offers. So instead of surveys, they want me to complete offers.
Yeah, that's not a survey. So I'm going to look at Panel Payday. Paid surveys online, get paid for online surveys. So the thing to always think about is, well, where do they get their money from? And really what this is they're getting you to look at ads, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're looking at the ads. They get money when you look at the ads. And it's going to take you, I bet you, a long time to make any money off of this thing. But take surveys, get paid. It looks good. Earn $25 to $75 a survey. Have you earned any money from them yet?
No, because, because I'm blind, so I'm using a screen reader.
So it's a long time to do this. Yeah, well, I'm looking at it right now. And, yeah, what this has done is they've combined a bunch of different things. So the very first thing is, congratulations, we're giving away a chance to win a prepaid Visa card. Yeah, no, don't do that one. Okay, Minefield online internet panels, your opinions count. Okay, so that's another one. That might be real. Remember, there are a lot of people out there doing market surveys. That's not unusual. Best day ever. Enter the instant win, best day ever sweepstakes. Opinion Plus, print money with your mind. See how simple it is. Some of these might be legitimate. Again, it's a question of your time and your energy. And I'm looking at these, and some of them are absolutely real. Some of them aren't. Panel Payday is just aggregating other people's surveys. So they're making money because they get a commission by sending people, sending you to these companies. They get a little bit of money.
So that one I shouldn't do, huh?
Well, if you're going to do it, here's what I would do. I would create an email account that is not your main account, like a Yahoo Mail account that you use for it. So that way they can't, because what will certainly happen if you give them an email address is you'll get bombarded with spam. So make that email address not your main one, because you don't want your inbox filled with junk, right? But if that's all you end up giving them is an email address that's just for spam, that you don't ever care about, that's not bad. I don't know if you'll ever get anything. A lot of this looks like real product testing. I think they're just aggregating everything they can find, and they get a commission on it. But every time you join, if they be careful about what they ask for. Because you know you're giving them personal information, so I would suggest if you're going to do it, just do it with an email address that you don't use as your primary email address.
Okay, and then there's this one called Say So for Profit. That's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, so all these companies are doing the same thing, which is they make money by referring people to survey companies, some legit and some not. I'm looking at Say So for Profit. Yeah, it looks very similar. It's going to take a lot of time to make any money on this, but they're, and in fact, they even have some of the same surveys. So my suggestion is, don't give them a mailing address, don't give them a credit card number or anything like that. But and if you give them an email address, which almost all of them will want an email, all of them will want an email address. Give them one that you made up for spam. It needs to be a real one because sometimes you'll have to go back there and verify it. But don't use your main account.
Okay, because, see, I noticed that some surveys that I do, they ask for my mailing address.
Yeah, don't.
Won't do that because when I give my address, I notice that I'm disqualified for the survey. So.
Well, okay, so that's legit, too. Like, sometimes you get called. I get called sometimes for surveys, and they ask you a few questions. Almost always when they find out I work on the radio, they go, well, you can't use you. Maybe in some cases, you know, what they're doing is narrowing down the survey to certain locations and stuff like that. I wouldn't give them a real address, but you could give them an address that's in your neighborhood.
Okay.
Just remember, the way they're making money is by getting personal information from you. So just be – that's all you have to do. Be careful. But you can take these surveys. You know, this probably in many cases they're legitimate market survey. You don't release a bag of potato chips, a new flavored potato chips, without testing it first, right?
Right.
They take it to the mall. You probably run into people and say, "Here, I'll give you $5 to come taste these potato chips." So there's a lot of stuff. But if some of that's legit. But if they want information. Never give them anything that they could make money out of, like a credit card. That's a scam. If somebody says, well, you got to pay us $5 to take this survey, but you could win $100, don't do that. But if all they want is your email address, that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Dawn. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
All right. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too.
Yeah, if they want an address to mail you money, I guess you could do that. So Chumley says perk.com is good. Chumley and Scooter X use that in our chat room, Dawn. PERK.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. You know, all that technical mumbo jumbo. In plain English, though. That's the deal. At least I try. Sometimes I lapse into geek speak, but if I do, spank me. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number, 888-827-5536. We should have a machine, a spanking machine or something that can, like a boxing glove, that if I say something geek, you guys could press a button and boom. I mean, we could work something up. 8888-ASK-LEO. Until then, you could just call and say, don't talk geek speak. I spent some more time with Dawn after during the break because I wanted to reassure her. So let's talk a little bit about this because this is, I think a lot of people, especially young people, people who need money, might fall into this. It's not a trap, but it's you need to understand what's going on. First of all, point one, we are in late stage capitalism, which some might even call predatory capitalism. It is okay to make money in the United States, and it is pretty much okay to make money any way you can as long as you don't break the law, including, you know, stuff that's really on the edge. So if you can get away with it, it's okay. And the internet has provided a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for people who are happy to live right on the edge of the law to make money, usually involving somehow getting to you. So it's really important to, especially because, you know, used to be you'd have to go out of the house to get scammed, right? Now it's coming to you. It's in the house. It's coming to you on your computer, on your smartphone. And it's not something you can't avoid. It's easy. But you have to, I'm sorry to say, be a little more maybe cynical, a little more skeptical. So, and we talked about this the other day, too. And it's important to remember that if something doesn't cost you money, nobody's going to give you money for nothing. That is not going to happen. It's something, it's just, that's not going to happen. So if somebody's offering you money for what seems like nothing, you got to really figure out, well, what is it? What is it they're getting? Yesterday we were talking, somebody called and wanted to recommend a plugin for your browser that tells you how accurate reviews are on sites like Amazon and Yelp. Very useful, but it was free. And so the question you have to kind of go through in your head is, well, oh, they're giving it away. Now, either they are one of the rarest things in our modern late-stage capitalistic world, truly altruists. And there are people out there who are just, I'm gonna write a program, spend weeks and months writing this program. I'm going to spend much of my money, hundreds of dollars a day on servers so that you can get a free service. There are people who will do that. That stuff exists. Most of the time, though, there's a way they're making more money than they're spending. So it's kind of incumbent on you if somebody's offering you some great service free, Facebook, Google, come to mind, that there's something they're getting for it. Most of the time, in terms of Facebook and Google, it's information about you that they're then selling to advertisers, and they're showing you advertisements. And, you know, we do that too. You listen to this radio show, you're hearing advertisements. And those advertisers want to buy people who listen to a show like this. So that's not far from illegal. That's the way a lot of free media works, and I'm all for it. My whole life, that's what I've done, and I think it's great. And I don't think it's a scam. I think it's fine. So that's Facebook and Google. But then there are things like these survey sites. And the trick and the thing I emphasize with Dawn is they're going to get something in return. They're either going to get your attention, your time. That's what advertisers want, your attention, right? Or maybe they're going to get your email address, your home address, something that they can use and sell. Your email address is valuable because they can sell it to other people to send you spam. You know, offers. It's a very thin line between offers and spam. So that's valuable. So what I suggested to Dawn, and I would reiterate, is make an email address that's not your main address that you use just for stuff like this. spam@yahoo.com or something like that. Or stuffidontwant@gmail.com. Those are probably taken, but you get the idea. And then you do need access to that account because a lot of times the very first thing they'll do is verify that address and you'll have to go and check the email, click a link. So that's fine. Just understand that you're trading your time. You're probably going to be looking at some ads, that kind of thing. And maybe you're going to get some money out of it. A couple of people in our chat room, people I know and respect, like Scooter X and Chumley, say they like perk.com, P-E-R-K.com. And, you know, it's pretty clear what's going on. As soon as you go to a site like this, you're doing something. You're seeing ads most of the time. And if you do enough of that, they make money because they can charge the advertiser and they send you some small amount. It's kind of like if you have a cashback credit card, right? And you get 1 or 2% back. Well, of course you're getting 1% or 2% back because a credit card company's charging the merchant 5%. They're giving you a little bit on the side, but they're making money too. Eh, it's a win-win. It's, you know, that's great. Doesn't cost you anything except maybe some time, some attention. So it's important, though, to understand. And if somebody wants something more than that, if they ever ask you, this is the classic con game. And this is the unfortunate thing is con games that worked in real life are now in the internet world. And what's funny is they're the same games. They're the same games. They're just changed. The Nigerian Prince scam, things like that. They've been going on for years in real world, and now the internet's just given them a whole bunch of new ways to play the game. There's a wonderful book that I highly recommend called The Confidence Game, Why We Fall For It Every Time. It's by a wonderful woman named Maria Konnikova. I've actually interviewed her on this game. It's a great book. And it's about modern cons and their relationship to the old cons. Maria's a fascinating person. She's actually become a poker champion. She's writing a new book about high-stakes poker. And in order to do that, she's become a poker champion. She's brilliant. Brilliant. But her book, The Confidence Game, is a great read if you want to kind of understand. I'm sure that's been excerpted in magazines. You could probably find it online, parts of it online. If you want to understand these old games and how they're, you know, the pigeon drop games. And do you ever see The Sting? I love con men. There are a lot of great movies and books about con men. They're just, all of those games have made it to the internet in new kind of clothing, but the same exact idea. And in general, if I were to generalize, all of these games play on one thing, your greed. Something for nothing. So that's the alarm bell. Something for nothing is the alarm bell. And in general, things like the pigeon drop require, in the long run, you to give them money in order to get more money back. That's how the Nigerian prince scam works, for instance. You ever get that email? Sure you have. Hello, I'm a Nigerian prince. I have $20 million. I need to get it out of the country fast, and I need a help of somebody in America. I'm going to, in return for which, I'll give you 10%. But if you answer those emails, eventually they're going to say, you need to put some money in my account just to pay for transit fees or whatever. They're going to get money out of you. So all of these con games in the long run will take your money. But the way they do it is by promising you something for nothing. So just don't fall for that. You know that. You're smart. And just be aware the internet is bringing these wonderful, fun things into your home as we enter late-stage predatory capitalism. But there's some of this is fine. You know, if you use Facebook and you love Facebook and you get a lot out of Facebook, you know that the information you're giving them, they're using to sell ads. That's fine. That's a fair trade as long as you're doing it with eyes wide open. Same thing with Google. We get so much value out of things like Facebook, Google, Twitter, Instagram. They're all free. Well, but there's something. There's a way they're making money because they're not free for the guys who run those companies. It's expensive. So what are they making? How are they doing it? And generally, it's advertising. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Take a little time out for more of our fine sponsors. Make this show possible. And then we'll get back to work and answer your calls right after this. I should mention our advertiser today, actually, is Rocket Mortgage. If it's come time for you to buy a new home, Quicken Loans, of course, the number one lender in the country, first in mind. But they've created something just for us geeks called Rocket Mortgage. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Three steps. They call it the power buying process. First step, fast and easy. Answer a few simple questions. They'll tell you, based on your income, assets, and credit, what loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment. Within 10 minutes, boom. Within 24 hours, step two, the verified approval. That means they're going to verify all the things you said about income, assets, and credit, and then give you verified approval, and that gives you a letter. You could show the sellers. You got the you're basically a cash buyer. You got the strength of a cash buyer. And you get their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. That's step three. They lock up your rate for up to 3 months while you shop. If rates go up, yours stays the same. If they go down, yours goes down. I love it. So check out Rocket Mortgage for the three-step power buying process. And by the way, the best experience ever. Number one in customer satisfaction 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power. You get started easily enough. Go to rocketmortgage.com. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Just take a few minutes to get started. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's rocketmortgage.com/techguy. We thank him so much for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Oh my gosh, as I live and breathe, if it isn't Chris Marquardt, how are you, my friend?
How are you?
Good to see you. How was your workshop?
It was amazing. And for the segment today, have your fez ready.
Okay.
That's all I can
say. Okay. I
and,
shall have
check your email. We'll review the hat assignment.
Ah, yes. Unfortunately, yes. I have no hat pictures, but I will wear my fez today.
Very that is nice. Good.
All right, hang in.
Trust me, I will wear mine too.
You have a fez. Good.
I was in fez.
I think, oh, you were in fez. Oh, I'm so jealous. We loved Tangier. It was really exciting. So yeah, I can't wait to hear about it.
Just a wild, amazing tour. Yeah. We'll not talk about Morocco today, but next week.
Okay, good. We'll talk about hats today. Thank you, Chris. Talking 10. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Line 2 is Sherry in Buckeye, Arizona. Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
No problem. I have an iPhone 10 that I've had for about a year, and we're on a trip, left yesterday morning, and while we were streaming music, it froze up. The screen froze up.
Oh,
and
man.
I couldn't get it to do anything, so I tried to reset it by holding the two side buttons, and the little circle started spinning in the middle, and it did that for an hour.
Oh, no.
But we happened to be approaching Las Vegas, which has an Apple store, so we stopped in the Apple store, and they showed me how to do a hard reset. So
which
I
is
that.
The volume up button and the screen off button, right? You hold those down.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But the problem is that this morning now, while we're traveling, I've had to do that 5 times.
Oh yeah, it's time to yeah. So they didn't offer to fix that for you, huh?
No, they well, we told them we were traveling, so that
yeah.
was why. But
yeah, so but that there's something. It's clearly something's wrong with it. The one thing you're going to want to do, and usually it's not too big a deal, is to refresh the phone to bring it back to the factory state. You know, like okay. like when it just came from the factory. It's about the only thing you can do, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you were at home, I would say before you do that, back it up and then refresh it and then restore it. You can actually do that through iTunes directly. You can erase it and restore it. But,
yeah, I had to do that for my iPad one time, but I was at home, so it wasn't a big deal. But since we're traveling, of course, that wasn't my option.
Yeah, it's not an ideal thing. If you, I would wait. And, well, of course, it's not working, so it doesn't really matter. But nowadays, I back up to the iCloud instead of directly to the computer. For a long time, that's been my recommendation, is back up and restore using a hard wire to a computer. But they've gotten pretty quick on the iCloud restore. So if you've been backing up to iCloud and you're somewhere where you have fast Wi-Fi, I know you're probably not right now, but at some point, then you could probably do that fairly quickly. But the key is you go in, you know, you go into settings, you're going to need your iCloud password. You go into settings and you just erase it, you know, bring it back to factory specs. That may or may not fix it. If there's something wrong with the hardware, it's not going to fix it. But it would be something that the Apple store would ask you to do, or they would do anyway, that before they fix it, they're going to say, well, maybe it's just the, you know, because it's a computer and it's got storage, and the operating system sits on the flash drive just like everything else does. And if it gets corrupted somehow, then that could be causing this. So, you just go to the general settings and you go all the way down where it says reset, and you're going to say erase all content and settings. And that's going to essentially bring it back the way it was when you got it home.
Okay, yeah, and I can do that, and I might be able to do that on this trip also, because I do back it up continuously.
Good. But, if you back up to iCloud, it'll be fairly straightforward. It's just that on cellular, it's going to either it won't do it because it says, well, I'm not going to, you know, kill your cell bill, or it'll be very, very slow if it will do it.
What would be the chances? I do have a magnetic mount for my vent in my car. What would be the chances that the magnet would have?
Nope. That's the good news is magnets don't harm smartphones.
Okay.
So it's a computer and they make lots of them. And some percentage of them are going to have problems. Unfortunately, it's out of warranty if you bought it right away when it first came out.
I did, yeah. And that's why I thought it might be just something else, because it's been a year and it's not had a problem.
They don't plan it that way. Sometimes it feels like that the day after the warranty wears out, things break. But I don't think Apple especially, I don't think they plan it that way. And it should last several years at least. Let's hope. It just something went wrong. It can happen to any computer. The operating system, one of the key files could be damaged, and that's why it's rebooting periodically or freezing periodically. And when you erase it and start over, you're going to start off. Truthfully, the best way to do that is with a computer at home, because it will re-download the software, the firmware for it. You won't be able to do that in the car. But when you get home, before you throw the phone out or throw it at an Apple guy, do the full restore using iTunes, and it will actually download replacement firmware, which is known to be good. And that's the best thing.
Until then, all of these multiple hard resets aren't probably any issue. It doesn't hurt it.
Okay. Yeah. It could be an app that's bad. That's one of the reasons the reset might work, because you don't reinstall all the apps. Just install apps as you need them. Because maybe there's something.
I've been using Amazon Music, Blaze, and the music apps.
I use those all the time. Yeah, shouldn't cause a problem.
I feel like those are weird apps.
Actually, somebody's saying that I forgot this. The iPhone X was delayed. They announced it in September, but it didn't come out till right about now. So you may just be under warranty.
Well, I got it. I remember I bought it for myself for my birthday. So it was the middle of October.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well. Just right, like the day after you got it.
Yeah, pretty close.
You can have them. Next time you're in an Apple store, have them check and see if it's still under warranty. And really, honestly, they should swap it. If it's under warranty, they should just give you a new one. No questions asked.
Okay. Yep. Okay, well, then we'll visit another Apple store first and see what happens.
Are you on a road trip?
We're just on a real quick trip. We're going to Seattle and back. Well, with Seattle, that would be a good place.
There you go. Yeah, sure. They'll have an Apple store up there. That's a big city, I hear. Yeah. It might, I do actually, on the iPhones, I usually buy AppleCare, and AppleCare Plus will give you another year at least.
And I just got the protection plan from Sprint, so.
Well, Sprint, you should ask Sprint then. Maybe they'll fix it for you.
Yeah, for a $200 deductible.
Oh, darn it. I think you just don't know. It could literally be something just went wrong in the thing. Vibrations, dropping it, thing wore out. This is a computer. The computers aren't perfect. In fact, really, it's kind of there you go. It's kind of amazing, to be honest, how reliable these are, given that they are so complex. It's remarkable.
Okay.
Hey, sorry. All right. Good luck. The phone was released on November 3rd, 2017. So you may have ordered it on your birthday, but you didn't get it, according to our chat room. At the very earliest, November 3rd, so it's still under warranty for another week or two. Apple's got a big event coming up October 30th for iPads, and the new iPhone XR comes out Friday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. La, 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 la. Nice hats. These are going to be fun. We're going to have some hat fun in just a bit. Yeah, and the chat room is saying you can actually check to see if checkcoverage.apple.com, if the phone is out of coverage. Checkcoverage.apple.com. We're going to Hawaii, Anthony, in April. Lisa's taking me and Michael to Hawaii. She's not telling us where, except that it's not somewhere I've been before, which means it's not Maui, because maybe it's somewhere in Maui I haven't been, but I've been to Maui a bunch of times. Well, three times, I guess. But somewhere in Hawaii in April for a week. I'm so excited. Yeah, Molokai would be fun. I want to go to, what's the island Larry Ellison owns? Is it Lanai? I think it's Lanai. I kind of want to see Lanai. We loved Hana in Maui. That was fun. Boy, I'd go back there in a heartbeat. I like old Hawaii. Chris, have you ever been to Hawaii?
I have never been to
Hawaii. All the places you've been, and he's never been to Hawaii.
Never been to... Oh, wait, but I have...
Oh, you have a real fizz.
The proper head guard.
Let me get my fizz.
for the hat segment. Because you got to have a proper hat.
Mine's bigger than yours. Hats.
Oh, you have a twit fizz.
Oh, yeah, you don't have a twit... Well, we'll send you a twit fizz.
No, I don't have a twit fizz.
Yeah,
no.
Some years ago, we gave all the hosts twit fizzes for Christmas, but I guess it was... Before your time. We also have, we should get, okay, make a note of that. We got to get Chris a twit fez. He's part of the family. But the twit fezes are normal. Here, this is a giant fez. Specifically.
Yours is like triple height.
We have a normal, regular size fez. This is what everybody else gets. There's only one of those tall ones.
Oh, and, the chief then, twit gets the tall head.
And then they do these kepis, which are quite cute as well.
This is awesome.
They have also a tassel. But I'll wear the regular fez today. So I fit in. Except my headphones have to squish it.
Just keep in mind I have a big head. Yo, I switched to earplugs for this. Because
oh, yeah. What's your hat size?
60, which is European size. I have no idea how this translates to anything American.
Yeah, we'll find out. Chris,
it's
is
big. It's
size.
Big.
I'm big too.
My hat, my head doesn't go with most hats.
When we were in Cairo, they have street machines that make fezes to order. It's a whole machine that makes a fez. The guy cranks it.
That is cool.
It looks just like that. Fez comes out. It's awesome.
I had to run around in Fez on the market to find the right size because most of them didn't have.
Really? Oh, you are unusual.
I had to go to
a
special store, and then they luckily
did. They make it to order, or did they just have it on the shelf?
No, they had them. Had them in store.
Here we go. He's here. He's back. We missed him, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. He's been on assignment in a land far, far away. Hello, Chris.
Not too far from where I live. I mean,
you're so lucky.
It was North Africa. It was Morocco. I spent 2 weeks in Morocco.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
It was amazing. The variety is just, there are different climate zones. There's the deserts, the dunes. There's the sea. There is oases, Berber villages, the Atlas Mountains. Amazing variety, amazing photography, and I brought a hat.
You were in Fez, where they apparently invented the Fez.
I was in Fez, and I bought, of course, a Fez in Fez. And as we do a review of the hat assignment today,
perfect.
That's why I thought I'd wear it,
perfect
just to
timing.
Honor the assignment, yep.
So these assignments generally are monthly, although because Chris has been out on assignment, we're a little behind, but people submit pictures of, in this case, hat, illustrating the word or concept hat, and Chris picks three to take a look at, and you've got three for us today.
I do. I went through the pictures. Thanks, everyone, for handing them in, and I made a choice of three different hat-related pictures. The first one is by Gregory Chesney.
Yes.
And It has a title, kind of a title, oldschool.jpg. So,
well, that's not the camera's name for sure. So
no, he definitely gave that a name. The JPEG is probably not part of the name. Anyway, yeah, what are we looking at? We're looking at a black and white photo of some mask that has a... You can see the front of a baseball hat on it, but it's all very out of focus, very artsy, very... It looks like it's probably been taken with a pinhole or with a lens baby or some weird lens that... But I kind of like it. This is not about the photo being sharp and focused and crisp and colorful and contrasty. This is about the feeling that this conveys, and looks like it's been shot on film. There's scratches on it. Looks just... It just feels right.
It's really interesting. It's perfect for Dia... De las Muertas, which is coming up. Looks like
probably
a Day of the Dead mask.
Related to that,
yeah.
So it touches on the hat thing just by having this.
You know, nowadays you look at something and you say, well, that could be a pinhole camera, or it could have been taken with a regular camera and then filtered, processed.
The way this works geometrically with the depth of different things in the different depths in the photo,
I would
think it's probably analog. I think it's probably not a digital filter.
Neat. Well, thank you, Gregory. What else do we have here?
Well, second one is by user Gagonis, G-A-U-N-I-S. Doesn't have a proper title, so I'm not going to say it.
Chris does not
like that.
Got
the camera put in there.
I do not like I went through all the pictures I uploaded to Flickr the other day. I made sure they all had titles just because of you.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
So what are we looking at? We're looking at a little tugboat of sorts, but it's not just a boat. It has a... face and a hat on. I have no idea why that is.
It's Theodore. You just obviously have never seen.
It's probably a pop cultural reference to something in the United States that I am not aware of.
Thomas
but
the
I saw
Tank
it and,
Engine. It's a kid's show.
Oh, it's from Thomas the Tank Engine.
I think
Engine.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
It does. That means it doesn't. It doesn't click with me as much as with anyone who knows.
You're not from around here.
But it still clicked with me because
it's cute, and you
want to look at faces. It's cute. It has a hat on. So I think it's a fun boat.
I like it. Theodore, too. See, there is anytime there's text in the picture, I just make that the name of the picture. So that's
what I do. That's the simplest thing you can do for making titles of your photos.
Yeah.
Think simple. Yeah. If text is in a photo, as you said, make that the title. Okay. If something simple is on the photo or something very clear is on the photo, that's the subject of the photo, then make that the title like Chris did in the next picture.
Oh.
Chris Boland has a photo of a pink hat and he called the photo Pink Hat. It's that simple.
Wow.
So
this is a good one too. This is a bold pink. This is a very pink hat.
I like it. And there are several reasons why. First of all, it's totally clear what this is about. It's a pink hat. The pink hat is in focus. It's big. It's in the center. So it's a relatively simple photo. There is stuff going on in the background. Seems like a reception of some sort. There are people. They are talking to each other. But it's clear that the hat is the thing that is about because it's in focus and the rest is out of focus. There's also a nice little color contrast thing going on with the woman wearing the hat wears a green dress, or at least there's some green in the dress, so green red. Is a nice primary color contrast. And you can see the hat being kind of, it looks like it's slightly windy. So that gives it some motion in the things that are on top. I don't even know what you call those, but stuff that's on hats, you know. And I like it. It jumped at me because it's so crisp, clear. The colors are so bright. And it was just a little cheerful photo of a hat.
I like it too. Looks like Ascot or something, some event.
Yeah, it looks like high class, you know.
Yeah, classy. Very, it's a classy picture.
It's a classy
picture.
Unlike
you and me who are wearing our fezes.
I think a fez is a really classy hat.
I like fezes. I love them. And they're perfect for TV because they have no brim, so they don't block the light.
They don't put a shadow on your eyes. Yeah. Yes, very good. Unless and you have the tassel in front of
them. They always make me think of the Maltese Falcon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. So I do have a new assignment.
Oh, good.
I brought
yes.
a new assignment while we are at accessories, at clothing items. The next one is glasses.
Now, when you say glasses, do you mean spectacles or are you intentionally ambiguous?
Of course I am. Ambiguous on purpose. Everyone, make up your own mind. Glasses can mean a lot of things.
It could be anything you want it to be. But take a picture illustrating the word or concept, glasses. And the way we participate, there's no prize here. This is not really a contest. It's just really to get you out there taking pictures. The way you can participate is take a picture, take many pictures. And it doesn't have to be a fancy phone. It doesn't have to be anything special at all. But take a picture, and when you say, that's a great picture, I'm happy, I'm proud of that picture, that represents the word glasses to me, upload it to Flickr.com, which is a great free photo sharing site. It used to be Yahoo. It's now run by SmugMug, and I think I'm just so happy because we love Flickr. And there's a tech guy group on Flickr, and you'll know you're in the right spot when you get there's like 11,000 members. It's a big group. And you can submit up to one picture a week. Renee Silverman, our moderator there, will welcome you to the group if you're not already a member, and then when you post pictures, she'll say, thank you for your picture. And in about a month's time, if Chris doesn't leave for some other exotic place, we'll have more reviews. Chris's pictures of Morocco are on his website, right?
Yes, tfttf.com/MoroccoPics.
We'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah, tfttf.com/MoroccoPics. And next week, can we talk a little bit about them?
If I'm here, we'll have to talk about
availability. Back on the road again.
A very exotic place. I will be in the United States this week.
Oh, well, you know where to find us. Thank you, Chris.
I know.
Find out about all of his workshops at discoverthetopfloor.com. Chris is a very accomplished photographer, but he's also a great teacher and has many books as well as workshops. Discoverthetopfloor.com. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls coming up right after this. Have a wonder. So you're going to be out of town again?
I will, yes. That's why I wanted to do the pre-recording thing. But
where are you going? Are you going to the U.S.? Are you doing workshops?
I'll be on the East. I'll be on the East Coast. Okay. I'll be in Rochester.
Oh.
I might get access to Kodak. I'm still working on that to get to film inside their film production.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Well, I'm having trouble getting the right people to talk to. If you have a good contact,
I do not. Kodak is not Kodak anymore. That's the problem. And
it's Kodak Alaris, which is a film manufacturing. And last time I was in Rochester, I got to tour the George Eastman Technical Vault for 1 hour, which normal people usually don't get to. And I got shot a video there to my YouTube channel. And I'm trying to have a follow up on that while I'm in Rochester to maybe see how they make film.
Nice.
Well, if it works out. So, yes, I will not be here on the 28th and not on the 4th. I might be able to cobble something together, but it's unlikely that that'll work. So we have 2 weeks. Again, after that, I'm back until the end of the year. So starting from the 11th on, I have no interruptions that I know of until the end of December.
Well, have a wonderful time. Have a great trip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones. Christina is on the line from Chino, California. Hi, Christina.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Okay. I have a question. I'm trying to help my sister out with her CCTV. Basically, the people that set it up, they kind of swindled her, and they don't want to help her out. And with whatever issue, whatever error message was coming up. So she found somebody that could possibly help her, but he needs to know exactly what error message she's getting. So we tried connecting it to a monitor, and it seems like maybe the HDMI port is not working. And I'm actually in front of Best Buy right now. I'm going to get a VGA cable, see if that works. But if that doesn't work and we end up getting a new DVR box, how do we get this kind of service set up? Do we have to call another company, or is there a mobile?
So you said CCTV, closed circuit television. Is that what it is?
That's what it's just the security cameras that they had.
It's a security camera.
Sold.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's for her store or business or house?
The house.
Yeah. So for future reference, security cameras have become a consumer product. You don't have to buy anything fancy. Google makes them under the Nest brand. One of our sponsors, Ring, which is famous for its video doorbells, also makes them. And there's a very good, inexpensive one that might be cheaper even than you buying a cable from Wyzecam, Wyzecam. What is she monitoring?
Outside of the house.
Okay.
She has a couple of cameras outside, like two in the front, two in the back.
So
she had it working before.
Yeah. How much did she spend? A lot?
Quite a bit. Yeah. I think she said a couple of thousand dollars. That's okay. Why we just,
this is going to really upset her, but the Wyzecam is $20, and there's one that rotates, pan, tilts, and zooms. You can point from the internet. That's $30. The Nest cameras, which are kind of the creme de la creme, are about $300. So when you say she got scammed, maybe, you know, in the old days, a security camera setup was expensive. Did it include a DVR to record?
It did. So everything's already set up. It's just the DVR that's the issue.
And yeah, so mostly what people do now is with all of these cameras, like the Nest Cam and the Ring and the Wyzecam, is they don't record locally. They put them on the internet where she can view them anywhere at any time, which is, I think, more convenient. And then there's a monthly subscription, usually less than $10 a month. So all told, much less expensive. So if you can't get this working, there are some very good consumer options out there that I would recommend. Outdoor cameras, yeah. Nest, it makes outdoor cameras. I have two Nest outdoor cameras that work quite well from Nest.com. And then Ring also makes outdoor cameras that have lights on them that can come on, and so you can see everything that's going on. All of them work at night. So you're saying her camera, is she seeing... What is going wrong? It's not recording. She's not seeing video. What's going wrong?
So for some reason, I think the video wasn't coming up. It was a long time ago, sometime last year, that there was some kind of an error message popping up, and she couldn't get it
connected
to her mobile app.
Honestly, I would just throw it all out or try to sell it on eBay and get a Nest Cam. I'm so much cheaper. I don't. Any effort you spend, what is this guy going to cost? You know, to fix it. It seems like a lot of work, and frankly, not as convenient a solution. The DVR solution is the old way of doing this. It's recording locally. So I honestly, that's what I would do. There's a Nest Cam, an outdoor Nest Cam, $200, high definition. It does need Wi-Fi access because it's connected to the internet via Wi-Fi, and the Nest has a website. You can go and see what's going on at any time, or you can see previous, you can get alerts on your smartphone. Instead of having a TV set up with a DVR, she's using her phone. It's hard for me to diagnose what's going on with your camera at this point because I don't really understand the question.
Well, the thing is that she had a mobile app for it, and truthfully, I don't know all of the details to it, but basically, the question is, if I get this DVR replaced...
Don't replace the DVR. Please. That's going to cost you so much money for a suboptimal solution. I think she should write the whole thing off. The camera records to a DVR via some cable that she's got attached to the camera that comes into the business. Is that it?
Yeah, and it's all connected on, her network, her home network and everything. So she was able to view it remotely. That's why I just want to know, is there some kind of an app where we can have our own home set up and be able to view it through a certain app without having to go through other services?
Well, if you're going to do it on an app over the internet, it's got to be stored somewhere. Is it a privacy concern or is it a cost concern?
All of the above.
Okay. I think you can trust Nest. They're not looking at the video. As far as cost, I think it's considerably more affordable. You've already spent more money on this thing than you will spend over, 5 years on a Nest. The picture's going to be better. I just don't know the brand that she has. I'm not sure, again, what you're...
No name.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what you're trying to do. You say, the guy says, well, if you could tell me the error message, I can fix it. And she can't see the error message because she's not seeing the video. Is that the problem?
Yeah, when we hook up the... Because it has an HDMI and a VGA port. And when we hook up H... Because that's how she used to have it connected to her old TV. She gave her old TV to me. So, because the DVR wasn't working anymore, was giving that error message. But now that she wants to see what the error was, the HDMI port, when we connect it to her computer monitor, it there's no display. So, I'm thinking there might be something wrong with the HDMI port. Okay. And if I try...
Please, just throw this thing out. Please. You're going to spend more money trying to figure out what's wrong, and you're going to get a suboptimal solution anyway, and it's going to break again. There are so many companies that do this. My recommendation would be to look at Nest.com, Ring.com. They don't have outdoor cameras at Wisecam, which is the least expensive, but I've got these Wisecams everywhere. They're so inexpensive. I actually have one pointing out a window. Then it's indoor, so that's okay. But if she doesn't have a window, I would go to Nest.com. They have outdoor Nest cameras that work fabulously. You can see what's going on at all times. You'll get alerts on your smartphone. You don't have a DVR because they store the video. It is so much better. As long as she's got Wi-Fi, it'll work just fine. And she needs somewhere to plug it in, but obviously she's got that for the old system. If you go to thewirecutter.com and you look at their recommendations for the best outdoor security cameras, they also say Nest Cam Outdoor, $165 for the camera. $165 from Amazon. That's going to be less than fixing that DVR. And you can get multiple cameras if you want. Two packs are $280 on Amazon. And then she pays the Nest service. I can't remember what it is. It's not horribly expensive. And it's great because, well, I'll give you an example. We were in Japan last spring, and I was just looking at the camera to see what was going on in the front yard. And I saw my mailbox. I have one of those rural mailboxes had been knocked over. And I thought, oh, man. So I scroll back and I was able to find exactly what happened. A car plowed into it. Did a little more research. I have a doorbell camera from Ring. I was able to see the person getting out of the car, ringing our doorbell. Oh, nice. She wanted to get it fixed. I figured out who it was. It was the woman delivering newspapers next door, and she was rolling up newspapers and she wasn't paying attention. She plowed in our mailbox, talked to her. I said, don't worry about it. We wanted a new mailbox anyway, but I have a complete record of that. I can't tell you how useful it is. I have several outdoor cameras. We have outdoor cameras here as well at the studio. And it's not expensive, and it's so much better. So all of these old systems where you had the big old thing that looks like a camcorder and a wiring, and it's going into a DVR, which is recording and looping over and over again, all of this is completely obsolete. I think it's just nutty to put any more money into it, because I can guarantee you it's going to cost you more than get a Nest security camera, $165, done. You have to have Wi-Fi and you have to have power. You plug it in. It was pretty easy to install. You know, takes a minute to install. It comes with all the screws and stuff. The other one, if you want lights, the ring.com, they sell and as I said, they're a sponsor of our podcast. They sell a floodlight camera that has a camera and floodlights. All these work at night. The Ring, you have a microphone and a speaker and an alarm that you can ring. You could talk to people. If there's somebody outside her store, you could say, get out of here, you kids. And that scares the heck out of them. Highly recommended it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, you know, and times have changed so much on these things. It's just gotten so much easier. Logitech has one with no subscription necessary. 24 hours of free storage. I think the subscription is nice because then you can go back in time. You can save clips and so forth. Arlo from Netgear. It's completely wireless. It uses a battery. I just think there's some great choices out there. And they're so much better. The quality of the image here. I'll show you. So there's my driveway and there's our backyard. And then I can look at the studio. That's the studio. What am I saying? That's home or away. That's where you say whether you're home or away. But then I also have
Switch to the studio cams. And here's me right now. Hey, see how high quality that is? So that's the camera right behind me. And then this is the main studio. Let's see what's going on back there. So it's low res until it syncs up. The only negative on these is, I mean, you can certainly set it to be lower quality, but the high quality uses a lot. Look, there's the giant screen TV showing my screen. So this is up in the, Burke put it up. That's good. Thank you, Burke. They put it up in a nice place. You can see the front door, everything is visible in the studio. So if anything, any shenanigans go on, I'll have a high quality record of it.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk tech. Yeah, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We can talk about smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. 8888 Ask Leo. Give me a ring. Let's talk high tech. You can also hear everything or see everything or even read everything we talk about on the show at our website, which is free. No sign up. That is techilabs.com. And all the answers are there. James Ruvo is out of town today, but he'll be back in a couple of days and we'll get those all up there. We also put audio and video of the show after the fact up there, so you can listen to old shows. Go all the way back to the first show in January 2004. Almost 15 years ago. Hear what we were talking about then. TechGuyLabs.com. Scott, Colorado Springs is next. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Pretty good. So I was curious. I'm trying to provide my tenants with internet in a fourplex. And it's not a terribly big building. And when I'm on one of the neighbor's Wi-Fi, I can use it pretty much throughout the whole thing. So.
Okay.
But I'm curious, if I signed up and got internet service and then just like gave everybody the Wi-Fi password, it worries some of the tenants about, you know, security issues.
As it should.
Basically a solution to kind of keep it secure and provide.
So a couple of things to consider. You're going to, of course, want to get a business version of the internet because, generally speaking, I think that you'll have to ask the internet service provider. They frown on doing what you're proposing commercially without getting a business version of the system. It also tends to be a little faster. It's more expensive, but tends to be a little faster and more reliable. And if they come to service it, and they won't get upset. So just something to keep in mind. It's up to you, but that's something to keep in mind. As for how to do this securely, your tenants are exactly right. If you have, it's just like a coffee shop. If you go into a coffee shop and you're using the Wi-Fi there, everybody else is on the same network as you. And so there's a potential for, you know, one neighbor hacking the other or spying on the other or, you know, it's not as secure a system. So in order to do it properly, a couple of things you can do. Some of the mesh systems will allow you to set up a couple of different networks. You can have a guest system, a regular system, and an internet-only system. You could do it that way. But the best way to do it, in my opinion, would be to buy four different routers and a little device from Ubiquiti called the Edge Router X. The Edge Router X is a hardware router that has it's only $50, but it has some very nice features. It will connect directly to your cable modem, and it'll do the routing. And one of the things you can do, it's going to take a little bit of study on your part. This is a kind of a black diamond tip, you know, but if with a little reading, you can figure it out. It'll let you create something called a VLAN or a virtual local area network. By creating independent VLANs for each tenant, you're isolating them from the other tenants. So you're going to use the Edge Router X to create four, it has conveniently four ports, four different virtual LANs. And each one will have its own discrete connection to your cable modem. They're all sharing that one connection, but they can't see each other. You could then, if you want, have four Wi-Fi access points, each one attached to those. And those would have different names and passwords for each tenant.
and they would then be securely surfing. So that's one way to do it. A little more expensive. One thing you might want to look at doing is, if you're going to do that, is use the Edge Router X to route an Ethernet cable to each tenant's apartment and then connect the Wi-Fi in their apartment, which would give them better access.
So you said with the Edge Router X, that's just one device, and
it's
then
the router. All the then you need four Wi-Fi access points,
right?
And you'd put them in bridge mode, and they'd each have their own discrete internet, basically. So it's creating four virtual networks.
Okay, so that's probably
that's the most secure, bestest way to do it, and then it's more expensive because you got to buy four access points. But if you're just buying Wi-Fi access points, you're not using them as routers, you can get less expensive ones, probably under $100, that are just Wi-Fi.
Okay. And so another thought I had was just putting that in and letting the tenants decide if they're worried about the security.
Yes, that's the other option.
Like a travel router or something.
Yeah, that's the other option. They can absolutely secure it themselves in other ways, yeah.
So I guess
here's one thing you might you kind of do want to be aware about. One of the things the Edge Router X will do for you is give you an idea of who's using how much bandwidth. One of the issues that can come up is that one of them is using so much bandwidth nobody else can get online.
Right.
So that would have that additional. You have a lot of metrics from the Edge Router that will give you an idea of how much bandwidth each tenant is using.
Okay. I also have one comment on the previous caller.
Sure.
About cameras.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of camera installs, and I don't know. She didn't mention how many cameras they had on the system. But if you're talking like one of the DVRs where it's doing like 8 to, 12 cameras, or, some of these, like in a liquor store, you'd have like maybe 20 cameras or something.
Yeah, that's a different story. You're right. That's expensive to do that with these Nest cams, the consumer cameras.
But yeah,
because you have to pay for the storage for each camera, and that would really add up.
Yeah, I would think that. So I was also going to do cameras here. Would you recommend like the Nest camera for that?
I love them. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And there's a subscription. They give you a deal. You should check to see how much it costs per camera. And you don't have to store. You can store months worth of data or 5 days worth of data. You get to choose. And so that might be another thing to, check the pricing on that. But I think these are really good. And they're very high-quality cameras. There are cameras, if you go to thewirecutter.com in their review, there are cameras that have no subscription fee. They don't store nearly as much, but maybe you don't care, right? Because maybe if anything happens, if you have 3 days, that's plenty.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to look at. The Wirecutter, if you look at their security camera reviews, talks about some that have no, like the Wisecam, they don't unfortunately do an outdoor camera, but the Wisecams don't charge you for storage. You're responsible for your own storage, in effect, on camera storage. The one that has no subscription, the Logitech Circle 2, will only do 24 hours of storage free. So you just have to, you have to care only about the last 24 hours.
Do any of them have an option for storage on a device, like a USB stick or physical memory?
The Wyze cams are an amazing deal, WYZE. They're $20 and $30. $30 is for the pan, tilt, zoom. You can control via the internet. They charge nothing for storage. If you want storage, you put in a little micro SD card into the camera, and it will then store it locally.
Okay.
Those are great. They need power only. They are Wi-Fi based, and they're very cheap. So far they don't have an outdoor one. Although these guys are kind of blow my mind. I imagine they will have an outdoor one at some point. I bought a number of these Wyze cams, and I can't believe they're $30. I can't believe it.
Sounds like a steal.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been around for a while. People are very happy with them. I've had great results. And even if they, let's say they break every year, who cares? Right? And they're pretty robust because my son, every time he finds it, throws it on the ground, unplugs it. He doesn't like having a camera in the house. WYZECAM.com. These are kind of amazing little cameras. $20 for the one that doesn't move. You just point it somewhere. and $30 for the one that you can control via the internet. You can steer around via the internet. They're not a sponsor. I just think they're amazing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls coming. Web 7821, you really got a thing on that HomeKit. Look around. There's a lot of HomeKit stuff out there. Apple really made HomeKit challenging. And I don't, you know, I don't know why Ring doesn't have put in HomeKit support yet, but they're not alone. For a long time, Apple required you to use specific hardware, which means a complete hardware redesign. And now they've done it software only, and I imagine it'll be easier. But if you want to know why companies don't support HomeKit, you don't have to look much harder than Apple. And this whole category is a mess. But if you have to have HomeKit support, then you absolutely should only buy devices that work with HomeKit. And there are plenty of them, including doorbells, I think. Well, maybe not. I'm clicking the doorbell, but nothing happens. Oh, maybe they don't have doorbells. Yeah, interesting. Lights, switches, outlets. Nest is not going to, because they're going to work with their stuff, right? Thermostats, windows, fans. Apparently, there aren't any. There's locks, the August lock. This list has gotten a lot longer, thanks to. So the only cameras that work with HomeKit are Arlo, D-Link, Kitty, the Logitech Circle 2, Netatmo, and Somfy. Whatever Somfy is. There are no doorbells. So you can't really blame Ring. Nobody makes a doorbell that works with HomeKit. I wonder why. Yeah, I guess if you had dozens of cameras, it probably would be cheaper to record locally on a DVR. Absolutely. I got the impression she has one camera. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Line 2, Jack, West Monroe, Louisiana. Hello, Jack.
Uncle Leo, how are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Just fine.
Good. How's the crawfish?
The season just started, so they're pretty small right now. Give us a couple of months, we'll have some bombs out here.
I'm going to come over for a boil.
We do it.
Oh, I bet you do. What can I do for you today?
I have a problem. I have a budding geek in the family who is 10 years old.
Awesome.
And the only problem with that is, with me being one and him being one, it gets kind of expensive.
You know what I would get a 10-year-old geek? I would look at the Raspberry Pi.
Really?
What is he interested in?
Well, right now our current problem is Fortnite. I'm sure.
Oh, Lord above. Yeah. Oh, Lordy, Lordy. You can't play Fortnite on a Raspberry Pi, unfortunately. Well, a lot of 10-year-olds love Minecraft, and a Raspberry Pi is a great device for Minecraft. Not so hot for Fortnite. That takes a little bit more horsepower, I'm afraid.
Right. He's gone through the Minecraft phase, and now he's into Fortnite.
Darn it. We should have caught him when he was still in the Minecraft phase. Yeah, Fortnite is all the rage. It's easily the number one game out there right now, not just with youngsters, but everybody. It's fun. So does he need a Fortnite device? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, he plays it on both platforms, PS4 and Xbox.
Oh, man, you are a geeky family. Okay.
But now he wants a computer to play it on as well.
Well, the good news is Fortnite works on Mac and PC, so you've really got plenty of choices. And it isn't super demanding. In order to get that working, for instance, on an iPhone, an iPad, I think they've released the Android version now. You can play it on pretty low end hardware, so you don't need to spend more than say $500 on a laptop to play Fortnite. I would say.
I'm pretty sure a 10-year-old laptop is going to get the computer infected with all kinds of viruses.
Oh, he is. Guarantee you. Yeah, and unfortunately, you can't play Fortnite on a Chromebook, which would be the safest option for him.
Yeah.
It might, you know, Apple's got an event coming up on the 30th. They might announce new Mac laptops. Maybe the rumor is, and I think there's strong indication that one of them will be less expensive for schools, which means sub $1,000. But Mac stuff is still really, really expensive.
Right.
So, your best bet is an inexpensive Windows device. You could almost certainly lock it down for him by, first of all, making sure he doesn't have access to the administrator account. That'll keep him from installing stuff. You know, just set it up as a Fortnite machine. You could even make it so Fortnite launches when he turns on the machine and nothing else does. I don't think you need to go that far. Minimum for Fortnite, it'll actually run on a Core i3 processor. I would suggest an i5 for best results. 8 gigs of RAM. It's nice. You can run it on Intel graphics, but if you can get an inexpensive NVIDIA or an AMD Radeon card in there, it'll make a big difference. It doesn't have to be a fancy one. It could be a GTX 660, something like that. I think for $500-$600, you get a pretty nice PC that would be more than adequate for Fortnite.
But he has me take him to Best Buy at least once a week. and we go back to the gaming laptop, the gaming computers, which are, you know, $1,200-$1,300. And I said, Jackson, there's no way in the world I'll spend $1,300 on the computer
For you to play Fortnite. On the other hand, you definitely want to encourage a 10-year-old to continue with his interest in computers. Because, you know, and sometimes people say, well, he's just gaming. He's not doing anything creative. Yeah, but that's how we all started. Gaming is, you know, the gateway drug. It's how I got started. And I got more and more interested and eventually wanted to write software. And that makes a big difference. I was just reading about a guy named Paul Buchheit who wrote Gmail. He worked at Google. He was employee 32 at Google. He's very wealthy today. And because he sold his startup, FriendFeed, to Facebook. And he started because he was playing a role-playing game, and he couldn't get an item in the game, and it made him mad, so he figured out a way to hack the database to get the item, and then he realized he could put any item he wanted in, and it turned him into a programmer. So
there you go.
There's nothing wrong with a kid wanting to play Fortnite, but I do stand by this recommendation of a Raspberry Pi. It's $35. It will get him into – you can get him into programming through it. One of the things, if you'd caught him with Minecraft – there is a version of Minecraft on here that's programmable via Python. And if a kid's still into Minecraft, and I bet he has some still vestigial interest, to tell him, well, you know what you can do with Minecraft? You can build a dynamite bridge and then blow it up. Or you can have a one-button house that you build. You design it in Python, the programming language. And then you just say, build my house. And it goes, brrr. There's so many fun things you can do. In fact, there's a wonderful book from No Starch Press on computer programming with Minecraft that is a great book. It's really aimed probably more at a 12 or 13-year-old, but I think he sounds like he's fairly sophisticated. So
he's really good at spending my money. I know that. All right. Well, good. That's what I want to know. Thank you so much.
Hey, my great pleasure. Thank you for calling. There, you know, I guess we're getting to the stage now where you'll be able to play many games, and certainly Fortnite will be one of them. Very, very popular game. It's a battle royale game on almost any device. Sony, Google, Microsoft, they're all working on systems that have the computer in the server, the computer in the cloud doing the rendering, the hard work. And then your dumb little device doesn't even have to have much horsepower at all. All it does have to be connected to the internet will play the game. And we're going to see those. Microsoft announced theirs last week, but it won't be out till next year. Sony's already got something similar. You're going to see these streaming game systems. And at that point, you'll be the answer to this question. This by next year, certainly, this time next year, will be, oh, yeah, all you need is a $12 doohickey, and you can play Fortnite because you're playing it on the server. The downside will be, of course, and this is why Microsoft, Google, and other companies are interested in it, you'll have to pay a monthly subscription fee. Everybody wants to move to the subscription fee. That is every company in technology now prefers to get, and that's a shame, but it's the way it is, prefers to get that monthly annuity as opposed to one big chunk payment.
Actually, if they could, they'd get a chunk payment and a monthly annuity. Maybe that's the future. 8888-ASK, Leo. That's the phone number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's kind of a timely tune, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK, Leo, the phone number. Back to the phones we go. And line one, Daniel in Long Beach. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel.
Yes.
Hey, I mean, Leo.
I'm Leo. You're Daniel. Let's get that clear. Okay.
Are you familiar with web design?
Yes, I am.
Now to get what are the minimum length? There's all these different languages.
Do you want to become a web designer, Daniel? Is that your goal?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Maybe something on the side.
So in the early days of the web, a web page, and actually it's still true today. When you actually look at this, what they call the source code of the web page is composed of a couple of different things. HTML, which stands for Hypertext Markup Language, is the kind of the fundamental, the root language of a website. And it's markup language, which means it's very simple. It says this text should be bold. This text should be italicized. This text should be big. This is an image. This image should link to this. When you click on this text, you should go to this web page. That kind of thing. That's HTML.
And CSS?
CSS was added later. It stands for Cascading Style Sheets. And the idea was you could encapsulate information kind of in a way. It's like a macro language. You could say, whenever I use this HTML tag, what I mean is this font, this type size, this kind of thing. And CSS has been used increasingly to style pages. The whole idea nowadays of a website is you want to separate the contents of the website from the display, from the layout of the website. In the early days, we mushed it all together. You'd have, you know, HTML tags followed by text, followed by more tags. And you could actually do that in a text editor. We've gone way beyond that. So modern websites almost always have a data backend, which has the text, the images, the contents of the site, and then information about how to display that, which will include three different kinds of things. HTML is still there. CSS, the style sheet, still there. And then the third and nowadays most important part is JavaScript. Almost all web pages today use a programming language called JavaScript to do the fancier things, animations, sliding menus, hidden things. A lot of that is done in JavaScript. Now, in order to, so really, if you say, what language should I learn to do web design? It's those three, HTML, CSS. Those are the fundamental things. You need to know those. And then JavaScript is a true programming language that all web browsers understand. The JavaScript typically stored on the server, as is the HTML, the CSS, and the data. And by the way, the data is usually stored in a database, right? That's things like the text, the links, the images. Those are stored in a database. So you need to understand databases a little bit. And if you want to get into web design today, you're probably going to be learning something called frameworks. These are web frameworks that help you design interactive pages. One of the most popular, widely used, it came from Facebook. It's called React. That's a JavaScript framework. So you'll be doing JavaScript, but you'll be using libraries from React. Twitter has its own. Google has its own. And there are many languages you can use. In fact, you know, for instance, when I write web pages, I generally don't write directly in JavaScript because for years, JavaScript was a nightmare language. It's actually settled down quite a bit, but for years, it was just awful. And so I will use a tool that will then be interpreted into JavaScript, something like Clojure. You can do that with Go or Python and a variety of other languages. And then you don't have to write in JavaScript. But you need to understand those fundamental technologies. So if you, in your spare time, you'd like to say, yeah, I think this would be, a great skill. There's kind of three groups of things you need to do. One is that programming thing, JavaScript, CSS, HTML. You need to understand those. The other is the database. You need to understand database design, how you call databases, how you interact with databases, because that's where the content is stored. And the third part, and often these are different people doing this, but if you want to become a web designer and have a little shop, you know, people hire you, the third part is design. You need to learn design. You need to learn how to make a web page look good,
how to make it usable. I mean, design includes not only how it looks, but how people use it. Now, we spent a quarter, I'll give you an example here. We spent $250,000 for my podcast website, which you can go look at twit.tv. The company that designed this is in Austin. They're called Four Kitchens. They had a designer who was a graphic specialist. He helped choose the fonts, design the logos, the layouts, things like that. They had a programmer. Actually, they had three or four programmers who did the JavaScript and the CSS. We have a database that is a back end written in an entirely different content management system. You're going to hear this term a lot, too, in web design, CMS, called Drupal. WordPress is a CMS. Google's blog spot is a CMS. Drupal's a CMS. Drupal stores all the data in a MySQL database, delivers it. It also offers a programmer's interface, which then the JavaScript can talk to create a page. The JavaScript is living on a server called Heroku. That's where a lot of pages written in Angular, which is another web framework, live. It's cached on another server called Redis. We use Redis Labs for that. And the data itself is on a third server at Black Mesh that's running Drupal. And that's all to create one website. So you could see this can become very complex and very expensive. And big businesses are going to probably do this. But the other way to go, if you're interested, like maybe I want to help, maybe I want to charge a restaurant down the street or my local dry cleaner. I want to make a site for them. The other way to go is to become an expert in something like WordPress.com, because you can then say, well, I am a WordPress developer. I know exactly how WordPress works, and I will create a site for you using WordPress. You could do that with Squarespace, Blogspot, WordPress. I can go on and on. WordPress is the most commonly used, and by the way, I should mention, a sponsor of some of our podcasts. So knowing how to do WordPress might be all you really need if that's your goal, just to be like the guy down the street who does web pages for the local businesses.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would pick a
post it on the server.
Yeah, I would pick a content management system to become an expert in. WordPress would be a very good one. And then you can get a business card and go down the street to the dry cleaner and say, look, you need a website. I can very affordably create a website for you. It'll be hosted at WordPress.com. They do all the work on that end. I'll design it to match your needs, show you how to post to it, do all of that stuff. That's a great little business. I think that's a great side business.
And what's like a reasonable price to charge?
Well, that's a lot, not $250,000, but I think you probably would charge an hourly rate, somewhere between $50 and $150 an hour, depending when you're first starting, $50 an hour. And because you're going to spend time on it and you want to kind of get, I would say get paid by the hour rather than the project. If the people you talk to say, I want a flat fee, then you just have to kind of get good at estimating, well, how long is that going to take me? You would also end up charging them a support fee because, let's say, I'm going to make you a site for $1,500. That's going to be 30 hours of my work. Okay, I'm going to make you a site for $1,500. But I don't want to walk away. You're going to want to continue to pay me another $150 a month to be support for you. And for that, you get 10 hours of my time or 3 hours of my time, whatever you think reasonable. And you can call me up and say, hey, I'm having trouble here. I want this to look different. And I'll do that for you. That's a very typical way to operate. Yeah. So I'd say make sure it's $50 an hour at least. You sound like you're worth at least that.
Right?
Does that seem fair?
Yeah. And what about the servers? Like
WordPress provides them. So they'll be paying a monthly fee to WordPress for their site. And WordPress will also, you'll have to learn how to register a domain name. But that's the thing. If you go through somebody like WordPress or Squarespace, they do kind of all the back-end engineering. You don't have to worry about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a great business. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88 Ask Leo, the phone number. James in Escondido. Hello, James. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Well, I've had an old computer I built a few years ago. It's a Corsair Duo computer. I'd like to upgrade it. And I'm not sure whether I should go for an Intel processor or a AMD processor.
Well, the first thing to understand is you're not going to be able to get a modern processor in that motherboard because what all the companies do, unfortunately, as they improve their processors over time, is they change the size, the configuration, and the number of pins in the socket. You know, when you built that, you got a motherboard that had a socket, and you bought a chip, an AMD Core 2, and you popped it in there, right? Locked it down.
I understand that. I have to buy a new motherboard.
Yeah.
And memory and processor.
Well, guess what?
So the question
now you've bought a whole new computer. The only thing.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's like, should I go for the Intel? Because the Intel seems to be more expensive.
It is.
And the
it's an interesting question. AMD, which for years kept Intel honest. In fact, I don't think Intel would have had as good a chip as it did, going back even before the Core 2, if AMD hadn't really threatened them in the market with better processors that were lower priced. But
I remember the first processor I built, my computer, I had an AMD processor. Those like a Sony cartridge.
Yeah, but
then the motherboard
for the last about 10 years Intel really has surpassed AMD. They got better and better and better, and AMD struggled and was not able to. That is in the changing right now, and that's what's really interesting. AMD with their Ryzen platform, R-Y-Z-E-N platform, is making processors that, while not quite as fast as the Intel chips, are lower priced. And so the decision that you have to make is, what is more important to you, price or performance?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a suggestion on that because I look at the Intel processors, the i3 and i5s, and they're pretty expensive, but the AMD Ryzens are a little cheaper. And they have more cores for the same price.
Yeah, it's difficult, too, because
that makes a difference.
It also depends on what you're doing. For instance, if you're gaming, more cores doesn't really help you particularly.
Not gaming. I use gaming.
Yeah.
So
it depends on what you're doing. If you're using software that is multi-core software, and by the way, that's not as much software as one might think. It really tends to be things like video and photo editing, drawing programs, things like Photoshop, Lightroom, video editing programs. They're going to use multiple cores. Word processor doesn't care. So it really depends. Surfing the web probably doesn't care too much. So it really depends on what you're doing. If you Intel ran into a problem, which is they couldn't make faster and faster chips. They kind of got stalled around 4 gigahertz. They thought they were going to be able to make 5 and 6 gigahertz chips, and it turned out physics defied them. And so they, instead of making faster chips, individual chips, they made multiple core chips. So instead of having 1 4 gigahertz processor, they might have 2 processors in the same, they call it a die, the same physical chip, 2 processors. That was the Core 2 you bought, each at 2.2 or 2.8 gigahertz. And then they went to 4. They now have the i9 processor, which they just reviewed, the 9900K, which I think has 8 cores in it. They're getting bigger and bigger. 16 threads. Well, that's another thing Intel did, which is they said, well, each core could do 2 things. So we're going to say this can do 16 things at the same time, but it's not quite as 16 times faster as a single core. And again, this is the important thing. Most software only uses one of those cores. If it only uses one, then the most important thing to you is the clock speed of that core, not how many cores there are, right? So a 4 gigahertz 2-core chip is faster on a word processor than a 2 gigahertz 8-core chip because the processor's only using one core. Right? So that's why this is a complicated answer. I think the truth is, what do you do? What do you do with your computer?
I mainly surf on the internet, but I recently rebuilt another computer, and they used a Celeron processor.
Yeah,
on it.
You don't these days.
A two core processor. It works great, you know. But the only thing I would like to get like a SSD drive or something to speed up the boot up.
Well, and that's the other important factor in this, right? The truth is the AMD chips are a little less expensive and a little slower. But maybe if you could take the money you save and put it in some other things, it would speed things up. Because, for instance, if you're doing word processing, it doesn't matter how fast your computer is. You're slower than any processor you could put in a modern computer. On the other hand, the speed with which you load programs, load the operating system, save files, that's more important to you. So a solid-state drive that is much, much faster in boot-up times and times to load programs and save files, that's going to make a big difference in overall system performance. It's a holistic thing. It's not, we focus way too much on the gigahertz of the processor. There's so many other things. A graphics processing unit, for instance, may make much more difference for you, even if you're doing high-end video or photos, may make much more of a difference to you than the CPU, the main core. In fact, you'd probably be better off buying a faster GPU and a slower CPU for most of the things you do. So it really comes down to what is your use case, how you're using this processor. I would recommend reviews. The geekiest reviews out there are at two different sites, AnandTech, AnandTech.com, and PC Perspective, which is PCPER.com. PC Perspective has some, well, I was mentioning their hardware leaderboard, their high-end computer, that's got an AMD Ryzen chip in it, one of the Threadripper chips. So, you know, these are not bad chips by any means. I don't think they save you quite enough to make up for the performance loss, but when you're talking Celeron, one of these really cheap Intel chips, they make these just for the low end market. But the truth is, for surfing the web, it's fine. You see people surfing the web on very slow processors. So it really depends on how you're using it. It's a complicated, frankly, thing, and I think we pay way too much. Certainly, tech journalists, but people, geeks in general, pay way too much attention to the speed of the microprocessor, the CPU. That's only one small part of the overall equation. You're right. Save the money. Get a better screen. Get a faster hard drive. Get a better GPU. All of those things will benefit you in the long run. You'll benefit your experience much, much more. I don't think I have enough time to get another call in here. I wish I did. But the weekend has come to a close. I hope you Pokemon Go players caught a lot of Beldens on Community Day. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and you'll come back again next week. By next week, I should have a new iPhone, the iPhone XR, which I think for many people is the right iPhone. But I'll have my review for you next week. And, of course, in 2 weeks, we expect October 30th, Apple to at least announce new iPads, maybe even new Macintosh computers. We're all crossing our fingers for new MacBook Airs and Mac Minis. Or maybe, as my friend Ian Thompson for the Register says, Apple doesn't care about the Mac anymore at all. Thank you all for being here. Everything you heard on the show today will reappear on the website, techguylabs.com. James has taken the day off, but he'll be back in a couple of days. We'll get it all up there. It's free. There's no sign up. Techguylabs.com. Thanks to Michael Cozio, our musical director. He's awesome. And Heather Hammond, the phone ranger who was in for the weekend for Kim. It's great to see you again, Heather. And thanks to you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.